He says, afterwards, we're still in the middle of tefillah, of immersion. He says, afterwards, he says, when you come up from the water, have in mind the whole Shabbos. He says, the Arizal would not dry off this water. It's such special water. Or a Shabbos on this water, don't even dry it off. Sometimes a person feels like, I knew someone, he said, if I have a towel, I can't even go to the mikveh, forget about it. This is impossible, not to dry off. Sometimes it's very hard for us, we're not on the level of the Arizal, that he didn't care. But there is an advantage if you want to leave the water on even. So it should be absorbed in the body, if possible. The water on the from this immersion of Erev Shabbos. He said, just like there's a difference between the weekday and Shabbos. We immersed to get ready for Shabbos. Here I jump in, ready for Shabbos. It's the same thing as Shabbos by day and Shabbos by night. Shabbos by day is much, much more sublime, much, much higher. Therefore, you have to go again in the morning, Shabbos morning. So certainly if you need a mikveh, but even if you don't need a mikveh, you need to go in just to get the Or of Shabbos morning, if you can. So you need to have one immersion, and just like he said, the Tarpaz Yud-K. Same face to Kavana again. Is like this. Three Ekes and three Havayas. Basically means we want to do tshuva and we want to start living in the moment. That's basically what it comes out to be. Every instant I want to start living in the moment. That's what a mikvah gives me. That's what I want to get from my mikvah. Shabbos. And that's what Shabbos is. So Amincha, you should have in mind what he says earlier. In this sefer, one of the advantages is we're doing the second part. The second part talks about the mitzvahs. The first part is the davening. It's quite possible that we'll do the first part as well, and then we'll see what the kavanot are. That's a more shameless thing. We'll see if we get there or not. We'll see what happens. But actually, yeah, that's, you should have that in mind, which basically means now every davening you're picking up another world. Every four, the four bowings, right, Avos, and Magen Avraham, and then Modim, and Hatov Shimcha, all four you're picking up another world. That's basically what he says there. He says how to do it. And from that moment, from Mincha, all the worlds begin to really go up. So that's worthwhile, like he's going to explain, to wash in warm water as well. The Nissen Karatz in Chut Shani points out, he says, their mikveh used to always be cold. That was the way it was. Mikveh was like a spring or some sort of an immersion pool. So there would also be a mitzvah to wash in hot water. But for us, he said, if someone goes into hot mikveh, he really did both in one shot. He washed in hot, and he went to mikveh. That's what he said. You might want to put on some soap, or you might want to take a shower, but that's your own thing. You don't have to in terms of the mitzvah of Erev Shabbos. So we're up to the next section. Washing one's face, hands, and feet on Erev Shabbos, and warm water, and cutting the nails. That's where we're holding. The Rebbe brings this about washing. He says, you destroy all the klipas. That's what we're doing. Shabbos is the power to just wipe everything away. You know, the Zohar says something very interesting. The Zohar says a doctor is supposed to be someone who cares for another person, cares for his patient. And he said he should be doing more with his prayers than with his hands. He should be praying a lot, and that should really help. He should be on the level where it helps. And he has to know that one wrong move is a very big cost, a lot. And it's responsible. One way, you gotta be careful. You can't. The doctor is not. It's not just because you're a doctor you can make mistakes. You make mistakes, and just like you wouldn't want with your problem. If it was my child, I'd be so careful. Well, Mr. Doctor, what about your patient? Why isn't he as important? It was actually a doctor who asked of a yashiv. He said, "I'm a very, very heavy smoker." He said, and there was a war not long ago. Baruch Hashem, there wasn't any real casualties, but in case there had been, there would have been, he said, I want to be in the hospital ready to operate. He said, but it's really hard for me to operate with a straight hand without smoking a cigarette. So if someone comes in who I need to operate on, can I smoke? He said, no. What would happen if it was your own son? You'd manage. He says the same thing here. So a person to be very, very careful. Very careful, because what we do, it has repercussions, serious repercussions. It's very. So the person who should try to find the physical remedy, he says, and if not, so then work on the soul. They try to find a way to remedy the problem on a deeper level. Shabbos is the biggest healing possible. And we all have an opportunity to really fix the week and fix the whole life, just a one shot. Shabbos is an unbelievable koach. It takes us incredible places. But we have to focus, we have to realize that how I act makes a very big difference in how much of the light of Shabbos I draw in. How much do I get of the light of Shabbos? Mm-hmm. That's the question. What do I get? Shabbos, Rav Nosson says, Shabbos gives a person the power to hold strong against any problem. He said, especially when they're closing the gates of Gan Eden on him. He feels like they're closing them out. Whatever I try doesn't work. It's not going. Can't get up in the morning. Can't get done what I want to get done. I want this. I want that. Nothing happens the way I want it to happen. Nothing goes according to plan. It's so hard. And I feel like, you know, the word, you want to use the word, there's one good word. It's not the funnest word. No, pathetic. This is pathetic. Ugh, what's going on? So that's when a person needs Shabbos. If Shabbos protects a person, he shouldn't feel down about it. Emunah. Shabbos is Emunah. Applied Emunah. That's what Shabbos is. So that's the power of Shabbos. So now that Rabbi is explaining to us, so how do you get into the light of Shabbos? How do you do it the best possible way to go to the highest possible place? That's our goal. That's our destination. Shabbos inside goes anyway. Why not grab on and bring it to fruition the rest of the week? We're saying, you know, Shabbos spreads out the rest of the week, but we're supposed to have a Shabbos which is just so on fire, so alive, that it's a difference. And it's, again, these are slowly, these levels are slow. It's not in 1 minute. And these are really aspirations, what we're learning about. We're not learning about necessarily where we're holding. Mostly, unfortunately, we're not holding here, but at least we can yearn and we can want, and that will get us where we need to go, and we will eventually get what we want, like Nelson says. Explain. So, Shabbos, everything goes to Tzitzis, the highest place. Now, every person has within himself also negative tendencies and things which are, they come not from good, they come from, he has to overcome and work on them, and despite them, he has to bring himself, be able to uplift himself. So, how am I supposed to do that? How do I uplift myself? How do I get rid of the bad parts, these difficult character traits and these difficult tendencies, these difficult the things that I was raised with, the things that that are just a part of me from my nature that are not so good. How do I do? That's what actually the Rav Nosson says. That's what Hashem said to Avram: go from your land, from your house of birth, from your father's house. So what's the three different? He could have just said, just go look for it. You know, he could have just went to the end of, go to the land which I will show you. What's it? Three different characterizations they have to describe. Leave your land, leave your the place you were born, leave your father's house. Like, what's? Just say, go to the land I will show you. So Rav Nosson says, no, he's telling him something. See, as you do this journey to go to Eretz Yisrael to find the light of Eretz Yisrael, and that's really what we're trying. We are living here now, we're in Eretz Yisrael, but we can be very far from the spiritual content of Eretz Yisrael. It's also very important. Nachman said Eretz Yisrael means even the physical houses go. That's the main thing, being there. But we also want to connect to the spiritual life in Eretz Yisrael. It's too bad not to just flip the switch and turn it on, you know, if we're already here. So he said, there's three things you need to leave. He said, first of all, your land. Your land is this element of a person's, it's artsius, he has his natural tendencies which are earthy, his earthiness. He's got to leave, try to get out of that, end of one.
Get out of L.A.
Oh, yeah, well, first of all, but also...
You know, forget about the news from, you know, that California's burning.
Oh, boy. He says, you leave your land, it also means a person's earthiness. And even if we're here, and certainly if we're not. We need to try to leave our earthiness. And we have Muratecha means the place where you were born. He says, every person where they were born, in their city, their land, gives them certain good things and certain less than good things. He says, the less than good things you've got to leave. Get out of there. And based on Bichas, thinks the person's upbringing, if there's positive, that he can hold on to, but then there's negative. Negative's not so good. The Alter of Kelm actually brings an interesting proof. He says that when a person started off with a background, or somehow picked up things that are not Torah, that just getting along in the material world, he says it's like a zero, which if you put a one in front of it, is very, very important, and it's great. It's a little bit dangerous to go there. Nachman says, it's everything, of course, godliness, but it's a little dangerous to go try to search out, say, well, I'll just, you know, I'll focus on the material world. You got to be careful not to be drawn after it. You can be sucked into something and forget the spiritual. It's extremely easy. So it's so easy today, especially. It's, you know, you don't even have to go anywhere. Just open your computer, and who knows where you'll go, and who knows what you'll do. You won't even know. You won't recognize yourself after a little time. Unfortunately, if you're not very, very careful today. Unfortunately, this happens too often. So we have to be careful. We have to know that there's an advantage. What I was raised with, what I saw, that's getting along with the material world. What I got from where I come from, that's good. That's very good. If it's in the secular education, it's whatever it may be, there's positive there. I have to not go after the not such positive. The negative, I have to overcome. That's the base of Icha. From our upbringing, what we were told, that's one way of explaining. It's another way. It's all the same idea. We have to leave all of our negative characteristics, all of our the things holding us back. We have to leave it all. And now Shavuos is our chance. This is our chance to do it. So when we want to leave these things, what happens is we're picked up, right? So all the negative also wants to go up, the bad negative, the minus negative. So that has to be burned away. What that means is, I can't let my Shavuos become soiled by the negative. I have to pick up the negative. And that means that I have to like ignite a great enthusiasm. This enthusiasm, this fire, this holy fire burns away all the negative. That's really what it comes. That's what I'm trying to do. That's so we wash with hot water and we get rid of things which are they represent what's called klipas noga. This is the in between. There are three unclean, defiled husks, as it were. There's three different levels where they're anywhere in this is like very far away. He has problems. He's got to get out of these problems.
What are the three levels?
There are three levels. Okay, we have. Right? We have fire, wind, and what's called a cloud. And basically, there are many ways of explaining, and it means a lot of different things, but on a simple level, there's the tendency to be on fire for things that are material and not so positive. That's one problem. Then we have another problem, which is there's the wind, something also, there's like the wind of the time, this storm, something blowing, something that seems to be compelling a person to, this is true, that's not true, do this, don't do this. It's very, the mores of the times, very often, or different things a person picked up, or sees, or is part of his group, or whatever he's, wherever he's at, wherever his environment is, and he's just, he feels like he's in a tidal wave or a hurricane. You can't help but be blown wherever you're going to be blown. And then the last one is the aspect of then you have this beginning of the clouds obscure. So then he starts to lose, he's no longer anchored in a good place, so he has to renegotiate all of the things he understood. He understood the value of purity. Now it becomes, well, purity is so important. He starts laughing at, what's purity? What does that mean? Good thoughts, not to see this, not to look here, not to do this, to learn, not to look, come on, what's the difference? It starts to be, he gets to be in a better place where he doesn't see anything, everything's obscured. Those are three big problems. And they go together, basically. He has a fire inside that's pushing him to whatever is pushing him. And he's part of an environment that also takes him wherever he. The negative part of him wants to go, and then you have the obscurity. So that even when he loses the fire, and even when he loses this design of the environment, he's just obscure anyway. He's in the darkness, he stays in the dark. But then we have Klipas Noga. It's kind of like a sheen. It's the shining element. This Klipa, on the one hand, I mean, it's like food, let's say. A person can't get along without food. And dry, it's not going to work very well. Hashem, if Kivak puts it so interestingly, he says, you know, there's a sin you could do 2 weeks. And you're chayav misa, you deserve the death penalty, and you're going to die. What's the sin? What could this be? He said, no, it doesn't have to do anything. No one will touch you, but you will die. If you do this sin, you don't change your ways, practically, you're going to die in 2 weeks. Late, mostly, probably won't last a month. No way. What's the sin? He said, you won't eat? Don't eat anything. Don't drink anything. Goodbye. You can't live. A person can't live. He has to. You see, that there's things that you haven't made. So you have to use the food properly, pick it up, we pick it up with a bracha, we pick it up by eating the proper kavana, or at least eating kosher, eating what we doing what we can, and doing good things with the energy we get from the food. There's different levels of how we pick it up, how much we're picking up, how little we're picking up, but yeah, bottom line is that we can't get along without food. So you have to have it, and it's called the shining husk, because if you do it right, it shines the highest, and if not, not so good. So it's both sides. So this double-edged, this element which we all have, and tends to draw us. A person, the Shlok Kodesh, asked his Rebbe, he asked the Marshal, he said, what should I do? how like it was time for him to go get married, and he was going to stay by his father-in-law, I guess, or wherever he was going to stay. He wasn't coming back to yeshiva. So he asked the Marshal, Rashlomo Luria, he said, what do I do? Rabbeinu, give me guidance. He said, you need to focus on two things. How you eat and personal purity. He said, these two things affect the person's entire body. So if you purify them, everything is easy to deal with. If not, it's harder. And that's my advice to Hopi Manah. He wrote this beautiful, beautiful work. And he was, I mean, to say he was on a high level is like a little bit of a joke. He was in such a high place. They would say about his book, it's the entrance way to Gan Eden. It's an incredible, beautiful work. So that's the basic, that's Klipas Nogo. So we have to be careful that these tendencies don't drag us down. So one way, this way, we want to ignite our yearning for Hashem and for good things, and then that makes life much easier. And I don't care that much about other things. That's what we're dealing with right now. That's what we're working on. And again, it has to do with just like this doctor. You know, if you want to be a doctor, you have to be careful about what you do. It's the same thing. Whatever is happening, when we act in a way that's constant with what happens on high to make things move. If we don't, so we have less of an opportunity. A person doesn't do these things, so he loses out. He does them without thoughtlessly, mindlessly, he also loses out. If we're focused and we're connected, we can begin to understand what a Shabbos should do to us, where a Shabbos should take us. We don't begin to get. See, some people who are connected, somehow connected, they want, they're yearning, and then we can get very unbelievable things. Look, turn around and say, Shabbos, it really is a gift. Gemara says, Hashem says, it's a gift. I have a gift in my treasure. It's a gift. But to be gifted, you got to do what you should be doing. It's possible to be connected on high, what we're talking about. So one of the things is to get rid of these deal with the klipah nogah and pick it up. It shouldn't take from Shabbos. Shabbos here, we're eating well, right? So, you know, the Chidushonim says, in extreme case, he says, listen, don't, you know, there's a mitzvah to eat on Shabbos. He says, and, you know, the Ari says, it's all holy. The eating is all holiness. It's beautiful. It's going to have places. It's doing great things. He said, but you don't eat like, you know, an ox. Things like a behemoth gasa, like this, you know, one of these thick-skinned animals. It's like you're very large. You eat like, you know, endless amounts of food, and then you can't even eat the third meal. You're just so hopefully, or maybe you can, maybe worse. Who knows? Right? That's not what the idea is. It's a mitzvah to eat what you're supposed to eat, not to overeat. That's not the idea. Don't overindulge in a way that's connecting your physicality. Try to connect to spiritual things. It's a struggle. It's a bit of a struggle. So if we wake up the fire, we burn away, that burns away the other negative kind of fire. That's really what it comes down to. So this is one of the ways we're trying to do this. So how do we do this? So now it's Erev Shabbos, it's time to go back to Shabbos. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful to throw out the negative, wake up the inner fire, like wake up my enthusiasm, wake up my yearning for Shabbos, and not be susceptible to the physical running amok and making trouble. I want to be connected to Hashem. I want to be in a good place. I want to be nullified to Hashem. Not worried about anything. I have such a powerful mood the whole week, no matter what happens with Shabbos. I don't care. I think they're closing all doors on me. It's so hard for me. It's impossible for me. Okay, I'm patient. Shabbos, the mood, and this is what Hashem wants me to be. No problem. I give nothing explained. It's because inside, the inner workings of things, there is a knowledge that the next week is being renewed, and now is a very, very big opportunity for good or to mess up good. So every person, we all have, Rousseau Solanta points out, Rabbi Nachman also makes this distinction, that in the Rishonim we see that there's two different concepts of the evil inclination, whatever you want to call it, evil urge. In some sources, it seems to be talking about basically the way the blood moves through the body, chemical desire or whatever. Bodily, just my food, I'm hungry, my body wants, I feel something, I want this, I want that, I see something, I want this, I want that. It doesn't seem to be anything terribly angelic here. It's just, you know, part of being riding this body and having a shaman and a goof is part of it is that the body wants what the body wants. Then there seems to be sources that there is an angelic being running things, and that's really what's going on. So Rabbi Nachman points out that they're both true. They're both true, and Rishon Lezion also, they're both true. Rabbi Nachman says the person on a lower level is dealing with the urges, the person on a higher level, he's dealing with a higher, an angel, or a very high angel. So there's two different aspects. There's two different things going on. It would seem that these two, even on the person on the lower level, which is most of us, that's what we're, this person has real understanding, so that he doesn't have any, there's like no test. When you're in a place where there's real understanding, there's no test. But the Baal Shem Tov said, and Nachum brings also, that when it's time to give you a test, they take away your das. You really don't have that, you don't get to hang on to that usually. That's a person at a very high level, he's preparing himself, he's working like Nachum says, if Yishurim says, other sources, if you prepare yourself, and look, Adam Kel, also discussed in the Sadiyah Port, in many places, this idea that if I prepare myself when I'm up, and I say, Hashem, I'm in a vigil, I'm going to work on it. I'm not going to fall. Please help me not mess this up. Let me get, not lose my temper here. Let me not be resentful. Let me not get angry. Let me not help me learn the amount I want to learn. Help me do what I'm supposed to do. Do my work. Whatever you daven about it, the photo is first to work. Or he visualizes and he works on it. So then it makes life much, even when he's in a low, it's not in the low. He's still holding on to the picture. That's why the Yisrael Salanter actually says, he says, Noach was a tzaddik tamim, you know, a completely pure tzaddik before Hashem. He went before Hashem, and by Avram was higher. He says, how is Avram higher? He says, possible that Avram, as it seems like he, possibly, Avram visualized, and Noach didn't visualize. He was a real tzaddik, but it wasn't so, Avram had a crisp picture, so he didn't stumble so easy. Noach wasn't as much. He says, it's possible, maybe that's what, that's the difference. It's the great difference of someone who visualizes or thinks things through beforehand. He prepares himself for a test. Okay, what do I need to do? How do I need to act? How do I need to act? What should I say? What shouldn't I say? What do I do? What don't I do? You know, there are three signs. As always, there are three signs. Not the funnest signs. It says that foolishness, the sign for a person who's in a foolish place right now, his mind is not engaged in a real way. It's just his words, he speaks a lot, speaks. Person has to be careful when to speak, when not to speak, how to speak, how not to speak. Sometimes it's like it's a big struggle. It says there's the sign for someone who doesn't know anything, someone who has no knowledge, is that he's always praising himself.
I'm sorry?
He's always praising himself, self-praise. That's someone who really doesn't have any knowledge. Now, of course, we know that knowledge, and especially from the perspective of Zohar, knowledge means connection. Adam knew his wife, whatever that means. The person's connecting, the knowledge is his, not just he knows he doesn't know. The minute a person starts to praise himself, he's very far away. So Zohar says, what is a person supposed to do if no one knows who he is? He says, he can talk in Torah, then a person will see where he's holding. And that's what the Gemara says. If a person, no one knows, he's allowed to say things, self-praise, so people understand who he is. If it's necessary, you can. There is such a privilege. There's always things to say, no, if he just speaks, it'll be, people will understand where he's holding. But certainly not to be in a place where, you know, the Gemara says a person like a, when you have a charity, you know, push to a charity box, right? You, so if there's a few joints and you shake it around, it makes lots of noise. The more full it is, the less noise it makes. When it's completely full, it makes no noise. But it's full, that's why. But if they're clinking around, it doesn't have any big meaning. That's what the Gemara says about it. So there's a sign of someone who was thin. He's got yark. He's got he looks greenish. His personal level can see where what did he do it? How did he do it? There are people on the level. I'm not there, but there are people on the level who can come on and discuss what do they see exactly.
So you're someone who's foolish, someone who's self-praising.
There's someone who has very little knowledge, so he's self-praising. There's someone who's foolish, speaks a lot, speaking loquacious, is the word. A person should be careful. If he wants to be more, have seichel and not in a place of shtus, he should be speaking less. Not so much speaking. And we're talking about unnecessary speech. Chofetz Chaim spoke a lot, but necessary speech, not, that's how the Zohar says. And the person who sinned or sins, so there's something a person can see on him.
I'm sorry, someone who...
Who's done things that he shouldn't have done? He knew better. So there's something also that's noticeable on him for those who know. Since he's greenish, but it doesn't mean any color you or I will see. Most likely, certainly not me. But those on the level, the Kamara talks about what do you see and how do you see it? What exactly does he see? So basically, we need to be very careful not to lose our chance. Shabbos is a chance for next week, a good week, great week. and to not let anything budge me, to have a powerful emunah, living emunah, not let anything budge me. And I have to be careful that my physicality shouldn't get in the way and I shouldn't lose out. I shouldn't lose that. Every second of Shabbos is a struggle. It's all possible. Especially if we do things ways like he's discussing here. Yeah. So that's the time. That's the time when we have to be very wary and careful. So we need this fire. And the fire is going to burn away all the other things. And basically it means, on a simple level, that we need to be filled with enthusiasm for Hashem. Get rid of all the negative influences. Especially we're supposed to wash, at the very least, we're supposed to wash his face, his hands, and his feet. The idea of the feet is where I go. The idea of the hands is what I do. And also how I feel. Am I doing or is Hashem doing? And the face also, the person should bring enough light, should be shining. Should have an aura. Should have be illuminated. Should be alive. Have vitality. So those are the three things we need to wash. Warm water, because we want to ignite, wake ourselves up. I want to be on fire. I want to be on fire for Hashem. I want my hands to do what Hashem wants me to do. Feet to go where Hashem wants me to go. And my face to also be in a place where I'm in a good place, not in a place where there's shtus, where there's, you know, there's something in his face which is not, he hasn't done tshuva, he's not really wanted to connect to Hashem. That was saying, well, you know, I don't know, I need to get rid of all these negative things. I don't really want them. Help me get rid of them, please. That's not really happening to me. Doesn't care. He'll get angry. He won't get angry. He'll do this. So that Shabbos is a very big. It's our time with Hashem. When you're with the King, you don't get angry. If you're really with the King, you're not going to get angry. There's no such thing. You're with the King. Even someone today, we don't have so many. I don't know. Maybe there are certain countries where there are kings that are have tremendous power like they used to. But today, I don't know. But I suspect that most of us wouldn't get angry, even, you know, let's say President Obama, since he's a pretty relaxed kind of guy, he's a good person, let's say, you know. So I don't think we'd want to get angry in front of him. As much as you like him or you don't like him, or if he's not your cup of tea, so Netanyahu, say he's your cup of tea, so, you know, I wouldn't want to get angry if I was with him, or whoever it may be. It could be the Queen of England, I don't know, everyone has their own people they like or don't like, so maybe she's a figurehead, but to get angry in front of such an important person, I mean, it's just not appropriate. We know. This person's here now. They might not, you know, next week is a different bechina. So I don't want to get angry. I want to, you know, act and comport myself in a way that's appropriate. So it's the same thing with a person. It doesn't matter. Even one person loves high tech, so the biggest high tech person in the world, I don't know, whoever the person may be, or one person loves maybe Bill Gates, whoever it may be, I don't know these people, you know, this one or that one guy's a financial wizard, so there, what's this guy, the Wizard of Omaha? There are different people around. So one person, if one had their person who they think, you know, in front of him, I wouldn't want to get angry. I want to talk business with him. It's like it's an opportunity to really understand a little, maybe get a little understanding and do better in my improve my fortune. So I don't want to squander it by getting angry at this child or at that one or the other one, or feeling resentment or being upset or being jealous. Like I don't want to. It's just a waste. I have an opportunity now. I want to use it. So Shabbos is also that way. So I have to get to a place where I'm not gonna misindulge. I'm not gonna mess these things up. And these things, again, they're all connected. This all comes down to Klipas Noga. How a person acts and how he relates to the medium, when he's not in the middle of learning. And it's not only food and the purity. It also comes down to how I act. Where are my character traits? Where am I? Like Dr. Kelmson says, maybe there's no prohibition per se for lots of different things. Angry, is it a prohibition? What is it? A totem? We can learn. But every bad thing comes from, these things are like the worst. They bring to every negative, every bad possible thing. Many, many problems. Many, many halachic problems. The person transgresses because of them. They're very, very serious. I have to try to wake myself up. So first of all, we're trying to cut over the best part of the idea of cutting with the nails. Anything is strenuous. I don't want it to be strenuous. I want it to be what I need. The nail has no feeling. It doesn't have the same. It's not like the body. The rest of the body. It's no feeling. So person, the things where I'm not feeling, it's hard for me to have feel. I have holy feeling. I still want to pick them up. I want to use them the way I'm supposed to use them. Not overdo them. Not misuse them. It's hard to use anger right. It's not an easy job. And part of the mikvah also is getting rid of the anger. So that's this element. I want to be in a holy place. I want to uplift my actions. Where my feet go, what my hands do, how my face, am I receiving or am I not receiving? You can tell, that at least we can usually tell. am I receiving from Hashem? Am I connected? Am I in a good place? Am I shining? Am I in this place of shining countenance, or am I what's called a dark countenance? No, angry, it's dark clouds. Ah, what happened? How could this be? How could that be? What's going on? Especially the feet are very, very important. That's the end of the Raglei Yodos Mavos. The feet is the main, main thing. What am I used to? What am I hegeling this for? What do I go like just by rote? Where am I going to? Where am I? First, some people they're going to Hashem. Wherever you're going, you're thinking, I'm on the way, you're going to Hashem. Like the Augustus, when you're going down the street, you're supposed to think, I'm trying to connect to Hashem, find another mitzvah, find another way. Very profound. I would say I've never even read this. I don't even remember this, but I underlined it, of course, so I must have read it. And more than once, I just don't remember. He says, part of the idea of the washing with hot water He said, when the souls keep Shabbos, leave Gehenna, and go to Gan Eden before Shabbos. So these souls leave, there's a certain heat, there's a surge of heat. So that's this idea of where we're trying to connect to this idea. At the very least, I want to keep Shabbos, I want to realize that Shabbos completely nullifies Gehenna. The Ramak explains, something very, very, I don't know a good word to explain it, to describe it. He says, Shabbos, when you keep Shabbos, everything shuts down. You're just in a place with Hashem, and then just everything gets completely relaxed. Everything gets some way. So when a person kept Shabbos, he says, so all the worlds, like there are different places where they, and he describes it great length. It's like unbelievable. You read everything he said. He says, well, you have like this. You have like, what is the merits you did? What is that worth? And then maybe on a global level it makes a difference. Maybe it was hard for you. Like, they work through different angles of what every good or bad thing, what was the effect and what other effect did it have, and how did it help, how didn't it help. It's all calibrated exactly to the second. Tiniest minutia of how things, how do we judge this? So this place, when Shabbos comes and trickles down, and Shabbos just, everything just stops. So, but if a person doesn't keep Shabbos, so it continues. Doesn't just stop. It's Shabbos, what Shabbos does, the power of Shabbos. Shabbos, you know, begin to understand. So one of the ideas is to connect to this concept, to realize that, you know, Shabbos stops Gehenna. And if we merit it, we can have a wonderful week without really being Gehenna anymore. We don't have to be in Gehenna. So the person who gets angry, the Gemara says, all the different types of Gehenna, he gets there a different, right, the level of Gehenna, he gets them all. He got there. Number one, he made all seven levels.
There's seven levels of Gehenna?
Yeah. Seven Maduras, seven, seven different steps, or whatever you want to call it. Furnaces, I don't know. Actually, seven Maduras of Gehenna, seven different level stages of Gehenna. And he gets them all. And them all in this world. That's all at a certain level, obviously. It's not the same exact. But the person gets angry, he's suffering, Nebuch, poor guy. Blood pressure is bad, he can be having, who knows what will slip through it.
What are the seven levels of Gehenna? Okay, so the seven levels of Gehenna, and
seven names for Gehenna.
Which sefer is that?
This is Gemara Erevin Yates. Sheol means the netherworld. Avadon means as in lost. Be'er Shachas is as in also destroyed. Bor Sha'oin is this aspect of this rushing water. Tita Yvain is a person in a place where it's there's like mud, he can't like drag himself out of thick sand. Salmoves is also this place of like shadow of death. And it's a tach, this means the netherworld. explain there are seven levels. The lowest level is this Eretz of Tachton. Tachtis is lower, but under world. That's the lowest, and the seven ways that the Torah tries to entrap us. These different levels. I wanted a different, maybe the Sifter would have explained better, but I only found this, so. And it's the learning of your test. And that's basically what it comes to. That's where that's, the Gemara tells us that a person who gets angry, he can get to the Dharma, I think. All the levels of Gehenna rule over him. And he loses all. And if you look at it from the perspective of the Torah entrapping us, then for sure we get entrapped. We get entrapped from all levels, all sides. You lose on every front. You know, you lost everything. That's the very first. It's very hard to have to keep perspective. But I'm angry. The very idea of being angry is that I lose my cool judgment. I lose my ability to see things the way they really are. So that's the.
So in Rabbi Nachman's story, the talk of Hachem and Tom, when Hachem is sent to Gehenna, and he's in the mud, that's actually a level of Gehenna.
Yes, that's correct, and it's very very well put. That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true, and it's not so simple. Where he was, where was he holding? From Dustin's perspective, might have been that he was so trapped in his mistaken beliefs that he just couldn't extricate himself. He needed someone else to pull him out.
That's how he would.
That's the thing of the. That's the end of the Chacham. What happened to him? The king sends for you. He told the king's calling you. He doesn't believe it to such an extent that he makes the whole philosophy that they can't be a king. And that's what we all do, right? Does Hashem still love me? Does he still care about me? That's the question. And we have to know the answer is yes. He's calling you. Go. Don't worry about any questions. Why should he call me? What if I did this? No, he's still calling you. You still can return to Hashem, and everything can be fixed, and everything can be the way it's supposed to be. So there are these different levels of Gehenna. We have to really work hard to overcome them. So any level, they all result in somewhere else in the next world. I mean, the Baal Shem Tov and the Ramchal also deals with this question of what does it mean that Gehenna, fire, physical fire, how can a physical fire have any relevance to a soul that's not physical? So discuss this. I mean, there's a concept. Well, first of all, there's of course a place where fire comes from, the spiritual counterpart, which is the Gemara says is much, much harder than regular fire. It could be that they might explain that it means the humiliation. The soul feels tremendous humiliation of having messed up. Why did I mess this up? That's that time of feeling the humiliation without it fading. That's the first element of the very first level.
Isn't there also a river of fire and a lake of fire?
That's something different. That's to go up. That's to purify from the physicality.
Uh-huh.
That's something totally different. It doesn't necessarily mean the person did anything wrong. He just didn't overcome the physical 100%. That's even high levels. And then sometimes we have to go to a higher level. You have to go again to be even more purified, whatever these things mean. So that's also part of this element of divesting oneself from the physical. But there's an element of this tremendous shame. And when it says that a person will be endure eternal Gehenna, from our perspective, Gehenna is not punishment, it's a corrective. So it means for him to get through the next world, he's just going to continue keeping this feeling of, why did I blow it? It's like, it's just a terrible feeling. And he'll have it somewhat, and he'll have all sorts of pleasure, whatever pleasure he has. That's a person whose body is not going to wake up, he's not going to, won't be able to let go.
So this is complete opposite from the philosophy of Lofton Bitterroot Hotel, California?
Yeah, I think so. I'm afraid so. Yeah, it's very different. I mean, we don't know, though. Maybe there are spiritual things. It's not clear.
Of course, what they were talking about was the current hell.
All I know is this. There are other sources also. And other sources seem to say, no, there is going to be something there. It's not just humiliation. There's something, whatever it is. It's not physical. That doesn't mean that anything. But I always like to say we're so cilantro. He says, okay, so we don't know what's going to be, but whatever the place is, it's not a good place. We don't want to go there. That much I can say. We don't want to go to these places. But in short, I don't want to, in this world, go through Gehenna. I'm putting myself through it in this world. Why? And getting ready for the next world. Whatever for? Well, he trashed my nice plate. I don't know. He did this. He did that. He did this thing. He shouldn't have done it. So why am I getting angry? What's the big... It doesn't make sense. It's not a logic thing. It's just, I don't know. I just threw off the handle. I lost it. I'm so upset. It's so... You know, it's going to be scary. Like, why are you so scary? Relax. Don't get people upset. Don't, you know, think about other people a little more. You know, it's not appropriate. It's appropriate. Okay. So that's one thing. So he says, you're trying to, the people, the souls in Gehenna get to leave on Shabbos. Shabbos, they still get to keep it, or they get something. It's not, they no longer endure their problem until after Shabbos. So the first thing is, wash off your feet. Where am I going? Where I'm going, it's not such good where I'm going, and say, well, you know, Shabbos is going to save me from Gehenna, but I want
so
this
if
week
you're
too.
Not deserving Shabbos,
you don't keep Shabbos.
If you don't keep Shabbos,
there's no respite until it's time to leave. There's no respite. This special respite is only Shabbos. Shabbos and Yom Tov. The person stops, he gets to leave. That's part of Jacob. What does that mean? That's the Ramak explains in the Zohar there, that it means that just everything for him, everything closes down, because he closed everything down on Shabbos. That's what we don't begin to get what Shabbos is. He says, if you even could see when you're singing your songs, you're singing this verse of Shabbos, and when you're telling Torah over on Shabbos, so what's actually happening is the spiritual content of the table is going up. Everything is uplifted, everything goes to the highest place. Everything goes up. Everything just goes up. The Beit Chavod Mat. So that's the end of the that's a little bit what we're doing. We're washing feet. Like I said, I didn't remember this. It's a beautiful idea. A beautiful deep idea. So I said then. Oh, yeah. So we have to know that when we purify ourselves for Shabbos, the Divine Presence is also purifying and becoming purified for Shabbos, because we bring the Divine Presence to the world. How we act, that's the more we bring Hashem into the world. So the more we purify ourselves, then there's a purification also just to get the light of Shabbos.
So the more we prepare for Shabbos, the more Shabbos will be prepared for us.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely true. We want to extend, it says the Talmud Chacham and Shabbos during the week too. So if a person Talmud Chacham, again, the level of Talmud Chacham is such a high level. It's not, we don't even really understand. Since we see Talmud Chacham doing something that's wrong, by the next day he did tshuva, for sure. Talmud Chacham says a person can't go down the street that's got it's got open sewer or something. Or use the bathroom. Use the bathroom, he has a hard time not thinking and learning. He just can't stop. So I don't know how people are on this. Is a big place to be. Person really connected to such a level. But the Talmud Chacham says he puts Shabbos into the week also, meaning his Shabbos is also relaxed, thanks to Hashem, it's one with Hashem, and the week is also Gehenna doesn't really apply because he's in a different place. Torah, real Torah, we don't understand what real Torah is. Real Torah is, the Gemara says Torah is like the salamander. Salamander's blood protects from fire. The same thing with the Torah, protection from fire. Now, okay, I don't know if there was such a salamander. I have no idea what it is, whether it's a real creature or a mythical creature. I don't know. I know it doesn't make a difference. I just know that the idea is that the minute a person has real exposure to the Torah, he's really learning Torah, it protects him from Gehenna in a way which we don't, again, we can just read, learn about what it says and say, wow, that's incredible. So the reason says one of the functions of Gilgulim, one reason why we need to have incarnation is because when a person's learned Torah, so he can't go to Gehenna. It just doesn't work out. The two can't go together. A person really learned Torah, he's looking at the Torah, Gehenna doesn't work for him. He just can't. Because he can't get to Hashem that way. It's a deep place. So he has to come back. That's why he brings the Gemara there, and he says, no, wait, dude. I'm really like, what is Torah? What is it? We don't begin to understand. We're trying to learn a little something. So we're, that's this
learning a little bit about what's, you know, what we're doing. We, you know, you take a shower, before we go in, we have to really think, you know.
So you could be reincarnated into anything.
Okay, that's its own subject. That's something different. There's two different aspects of reincarnation. We have reincarnation, because the reason reincarnation is very, very different than the Indian concept. Totally different. From the Indian concept, you can have a cow, it's got a human soul in it, and it's a cow. From the Rizal, that's impossible. The cow can only act as like a jail for a human soul. And it's a cow, and the human soul has no control over it, usually. Maybe sometimes it can get a little bit. But the soul is determined by the mind that's able to hold the soul. You can't have a soul that's like, you know, in a place where it's not able to express itself. It's impossible to express itself. So you have a human mind to have a human soul. But you can't have a human soul in a mind that can't get where it's supposed to be. It doesn't work. It just doesn't fit. It can't fit in there. So it can be a jail, like being trapped in an elevator, being trapped in this animal.
But that makes perfect sense. One of our cats, when he meows, he sounds like someone trapped in a box.
That's
what my wife says.
How interesting. I know these things, I don't know. All I know is that's what it says. It's a trap, and the person is trapped, and that's where he is, and that's where he has to be. And there are different, things that make a person go here, and go there, and go through this problem and that problem. So that's part of this one thing in the reincarnation, which is a trap. Then you have another reincarnation, which the person comes back in a human body, and he gets to do what he's supposed to do. And if he didn't sin, he just didn't do what he needed, positive, so he can come back as an Ibor, like as a spark, into another human being, and then when that person does the help him do the mitzvah, and then it's as if he did it. He doesn't have to come back physically. Otherwise, he has to come back. It's not so simple. It works like, again, this is very, very deep. But like, in short, that's how it works. It's like, is it a prison cell, or is it a... Or is it a... What is it? How does it work?
And it can be very spooky.
Oh. All right.
I'm not even talking about cuckoo clocks. That's another subject.
There's a lot of very deep stuff going on. It's true. This topic is much closer to our hearts than we even understand. We don't even get it. When you see a little light, or if someone else has a little light in terms of their what's going on in their life, and you happen to be part of it somehow, and like everything changes. What's going on? What is all? You know, you do business with this person, and you do this with this person. You see this, you see that. You go here, you go there. All these things are not. They're not. It's not surface things. It's like deeper things going on. There's sparks going up. There's stuff happening which we don't have any. Sean has this. I don't remember the story. It's a story about this dog who was just. The father came to the dog. Like, whole, I don't know what the story was. It's very interesting what it was and how it was and how to fix it. The whole mice. I dreamed. That's the dog. Again, these are beyond, way beyond my understanding. I don't even remember the story, but it's not so simple sometimes. Who knows who's where, who knows why, who knows? Not simple.
Can you write about the stories? Okay, if you have stories that really happened, can you write, can you put them down?
It depends what the story is. It depends also if it's going to encourage people or discourage them. Some people do, some people don't. You know, it's not so simple. Not simple. These things are not simple. We're in a place now where people are, it's a big entice people to very people tend not to believe anything that's not intellectual. So it gets very hard to put things down in a way that people will understand what you're talking about. What are you talking about? What's that? It's not so easy to reach people who are in such a state. It's just, sometimes you can just get in people's way. It's hard to know. Will it help? How will it help? But when you're part of it, when you see it, it becomes. When you're ahead and someone tells you what the story behind it is, and it's like. It's wow. It's,
no, we don't know what the story is behind it.
Okay,
it's just.
I don't know. But that I don't know. That's very powerful. Again, I don't really know. So should it be committed to writing? Maybe. I don't know. Even so, we know the story is behind it. Let's say someone real revealed, and like it's.
No, just living here in your Shoyim is just like the holiness and just the.
It's hard to communicate in a way that another person will understand. That's also Shabbos. Shabbos could do it though. Have a Shabbos status guest. If you're really in a place of Shabbos, they'll feel a little drop. A little something. That's enough. It's enough to make them say, you know, what was that? That's not like, you know, I like being on the internet, I like going to Facebook, I like hanging out with this one, that one. No, that Shabbos, there was something, I don't know, deeper, something I need. That's what you need. If you wake that up, it's all fine. That person will allow them to go. They'll figure everything out. They'll get where they need to be. So one of the best ways of fixing is just to connect to the life of Shabbos. To at least learn about it. We'll learn about it. Try to learn about it every day. Try to want that, at least a spontaneous connection. Want to like just, Shabbos now, wow, you know, will you do this before you shower? I don't know. Are you feeling like, I don't know. Maybe we should. If we're Zoche, at least to learn about it. At least to want to.
I mean, like stories from the Gemara.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's a great question. That's a great, great question. And that question was asked me. That question was asked by there was a big a nobleman asked this certain chacham. The Munkat Jerov brings it to the Torah. This nobleman asked a wise rabbi, I guess. He said, "I don't understand. Like, what do you think the Talmud? I mean, there's so many tall tales there. I mean, come on. You believe these? The eye of the fish was this big, and 300 barrels of oil from it, and they're this large and that big. What are you talking about? Can you explain it to me? I mean, you can relate to it seriously?" She said, "I'll tell you." A parable and you'll understand. So once there was a king, and the king, he didn't have a child. In his old age, he had a son. He was so happy. But, you know, at a certain point, his son's 10, 11, he's getting very decrepit, he's older and older, like, what's going to be? Not going to last much longer. And he started doing some construction, did this, did that. Shortly thereafter, he passed away. The son becomes the king, and he's already maybe 13, 12, 14, I don't know how old he was. And, you know, kings, you know, it's well known that they, you know, they want to, usually they blow the treasury on all stupid things. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know where. They don't know, you know, what to do, how to run a kingdom. So he finds out, first of all, what's the monetary situation? They tell him, well, there used to be a lot of gems. A lot of gems. A fortune of money and gems. They're all gone. We don't know where they are. There's enough money to run the kingdom, but don't drain yourself. Like, there's, you know, there's some, there's reserve, but don't, you can't do anything extravagant. You don't have any money for any big extravagance. We can make it. Okay. And he ran the kingdom. And before the king died, he had painted this beautiful picture. He had an artist come and paint a lion that looks like it's about to pounce. You walk into this lion, and it's like, it's so perfect. You feel like it's about to jump. Like, it's like so vivid. Except that the back was backwards. Its hind feet faced up in an impossible position, or one of its hind feet. What's going on? An eagle spread wings. Its neck is backwards. Something's backwards about it, which is like impossible. And other than that, it's exactly perfectly right. There are a whole bunch of these paintings, pictures. And, you know, he's grown up with them from 14. He remembers them. As he gets older, he starts to look at these pictures, these paintings. He says, what is the meaning of this? He starts to ask, when did this come about? So, yeah, from before your father died, he brought an artist here. He did a little bit of construction, did different things. And this is one of the things he did. How strange. Things and things. As he gets older, he gets more mature, he starts to realize, maybe my father meant to tell me something with these pictures. I mean, sure, before he died. Maybe they mean something deeper than just a picture as is. I mean, it's counterintuitive. Why would you make a picture like that? You mean something to it. You're paying an artist a lot of money. What for? And the gems disappeared, and who knows? And eventually he starts to realize, maybe the lion's foot's pointing somewhere. And he goes to check where he thinks it's pointing, and sure enough, there's a place that looks maybe a little different. He has someone come in and brings in the crew and supervises, and there are the gems. But now he's mature enough to know how to use them. And he figures out all the rest of the paintings, takes them all out, he has a fortune of money, and it didn't blow it. He says, it's the same thing. When you look at the Talmud, the logical part of the Talmud is perfect. It's a perfect construct. It's unbelievable. And every once in a while, you have a story which is like, what's this doing here? what does this mean? Like, who, it doesn't need to belong. Like, it's still logic books, but put logic. Who cares? There's nothing, very little to do with anything to do with the subject at hand very often. It seems to be completely, like, non sequitur, irrelevant. So what is it doing here? But the student is not yet mature enough to use what the teachers want to reveal to him. He'll misuse it, he'll squander it, he'll use it for the wrong thing, he'll get arrogant, who knows what. So they hit it. And he's supposed to think about it. Why is this? It's like, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit in the rest of the book. It just doesn't make sense. And eventually, he gets to understanding maturity to see what is the message here. But then he's mature enough not to squander it, not to misuse it. That's how he starts. The stories of the Gemara are meant to be something, we don't even know if they're literal or not. Some are, some aren't. We don't know which ones. We have no right to say which ones are literal. Someone actually left a Chumash, and he said, the Gemara says that Og was sitting and his legs were dangling on the parapet, these gigantic walls. He was so big, he was such a giant. I mean, he was like, who knows how high he was? 100 feet, who knows how big he was? He said, that can't be literal. Chazish didn't say anything. Friday night, this guy used to come to the dinner. It's Friday night, told to Chazanish. The Chazanish said, listen, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but please don't touch my wine because, you know, till now I knew you were observed in Shabbos and you were from Jew, but now you're not. You know, you're very learned, but you said things that I'm a little afraid that you'll mess up my wine. You're a person who knows better, so someone who knows better goes off on weird places. If their emun is not 100% the way it should be, they have mistaken understandings of things, they take things their own way, so then they're able to defile the wine. I don't want you to defile my wine. He said, well, what did I say? So what about Og? I mean, there are commentaries who say it's not literal. He said, they don't say it can't be literal. They just say they don't think it is literal. They say it can't be literal. I mean, maybe it's literal. So we don't really know. I don't know what the story is. Is it literal? Isn't it? I actually saw later, there is a way of explaining it literally, that it happens sometimes. Yeah, something very interesting, a whole different, what happened and how could that have happened. From obviously above nature, but it's very, we don't know what the stories are trying to tell me, is it physically true or not. From the morale perspective, it doesn't even matter, he doesn't care. So they use this, which might have been even a tall tale of their times, to hide something, to teach me something. Not so much to tell me that this is this way and that's that way and that's the other way.
The reason I ask is because I'm getting emails from relatives that are taking courses from rabbis.
Okay.
And they're talking about mikvah.
Okay, great.
And so I'm sort of like in between. I don't want to give them too much information so they'll be turned off and go poo-poo about a very important subject.
Uh-huh.
And so I simply emailed them back simply saying, men in Israel go to mikvah every day. And we're basically waiting for Mashiach. Leaving it at that. And I said, the other subject is saying that you need the reason for the other subject is that to put your wife first, so both everything. And I was quoting Rabbi Rosh.
Excellent.
In Garden of Peace.
Great.
I kept it as that. Nice, simple, to the point.
Good.
Because I didn't want to, what's the word, muddy the water?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I feel like, what's the word? Get things too confused.
Sometimes, yeah. It's hard. It can be hard. It's a renewal also. It's a renewal of their relationship every month.
Because I don't know where they're coming from or how they're holding. I keep it really simple.
It's true. Very true.
Okay.
So I think we're good here, Bez Hashem, without just mark a little hole. Tomorrow we'll continue.